Welcome to the Sacred Body Podcast, where we explore the embodiment of belonging and the journey to get there. The topics we'll focus on primarily are food, birth, sex, and boundaries. And I'm your host, Stacey Ramsauer. I'm very excited to introduce today's guest on the Sacred Body Podcast. This is my friend Blair Lindsay. And Blair is a relationship and intimacy educator and coach, as well as a deeply experienced human woman. She's a dancer, a tantric educator, a yogini, a seeker, and someone that I really respect and admire for her dedication to living in line with what she knows to be true. I admire you so much, Blair, in the way that you offer without apology your commitment to the divine feminine, as well as kind of calling out the limitations of some of the social media means of describing and expressing this world, this term, this energy, and what I see you offering people, because you include men in your education, at least in acknowledging their role in moving the world forward. It's very grounded and is very clearly offered from your depth of experience. And today I am just really excited to give you a platform to talk about your journey to how you came to be the kind of educator you are, and what the next steps are. I know you continue to deepen your skill set and expand your toolbox, and we've had some really interesting conversations about how all of these training experiences add to the understanding of what it is we have to offer in the world. Even, you know, sometimes saying like, oh, that experience wasn't really great or enlightened me in a way that I never thought I signed up for. So Blair and I met in a training, a bodywork training with Kimberly Johnson and Ellen Heed. And I just want to offer this kind of context to meeting you, Blair. I felt very intimidated at that training because I had done no bodywork training before. I was really teaching about sexuality from my own base of experience and just this knowledge that this is something that is meaningful to my life's work and my path. But that was sort of my first foray into official training. And it was a pretty intensive training, right? Pelvic floor focused body work, among other things, trauma resolution, et cetera. And I felt so intimidated in that group of people because many had already studied before. They had done a previous module before. And I think it was the first partnered exercise you and I partnered together.
Yeah, I think so.
And then it was just like lunch every day, and
you became my homegirl.
Like, just camaraderie throughout the whole thing that has continued in spite of the fact that you live in Mexico. The internet is a wonderful thing. So that is, I think, a big part of the conversation that I'd like you to share at some point. We don't need to nail into it right now, but I think part of the intimidation was also, you know, like women and the stories we kind of tell about each other based on body language, based on what you look like, based on, you know, introducing myself to you and you saying I'm a sex coach, and immediately I'm like, oh my God, you must be like the coolest, most confident, most liberated human being, just all the stories that immediately fill in, rather than hey, homegirl.
Yeah.
Like starting from that baseline place. So,
and it's funny that you're bringing this up too, because this is something that's really resurfaced. It's very timely for me right now.
Mm.
Is our relationships with other women. And that training was really intense. And I felt like you were a lifeline in that training, because there was this pre-established group of women. And so we were kind of walking in as like the outsiders.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about you, but that's just a role that I've had over and over and over again in my life with women, mm. actually. And I'm always kind of thinking about this interesting point that like a lot of my wounds are around the feminine and are with women, and I also work primarily with women.
Yes.
You know, it's like, it's a paradox, but it's also, it serves me so much. But yeah, walking into that training was a challenge, and seeing you there, and I remember actually in one of the exercises we did that I literally had no idea how to do anything. I was so out of my element. I wasn't a body worker. And I was just like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm just going to like follow my impulse and my urge. And if I make a fool of myself, that's okay. I'll be okay.
Yeah.
And you, I was so touched because you actually brought it up in a group share. You were like, you know, you just mentioned that I was able to show up even though I didn't have the knowledge. And I was really touched by that. And I feel like that's also another theme in my life, is like just having to dive into things and be the outsider and maybe be the one who's not as experienced or not like fitting in all the right ways, or at least that's my perception.
Yeah.
And then having to rise to the challenge of just showing up authentically.
And what I experienced of that from you was, and I want to acknowledge that it was even further acknowledged and validated by our instructors, the depth of intuition involving like physicality and physical expression. There is something innate to you about teaching through movement, teaching through contact. And, you know, in a sexuality intimacy coach, what more could you ask for? But there is this kind of level of intimidation when it's like, I don't know what these muscles are. I don't know how to like do a, is this deep tissue? Is, you know, it's a quote unquote body work training. And like you and I have each, I'm sure, had really excellent body work and also really terrible body work. And to be touched terribly is the worst thing ever. But, you know, I think so much of our life and our growth requires that. Well, here it's this delicate balance between throwing caution to the wind and having something within ourselves that's grounded to refer back to, right? Like, yeah. I'm going to operate from an earthen place, get out of my head and all of the potential consequences a little bit. But, you know, you weren't by any means acting haphazardly. And that kind of makes me wonder about your whirlwind journey around the globe that has led you to offering the kind of work that you do. If you want to, you know, you can go back. You've shared really beautifully about what kind of prompted you to go overseas, but wherever you'd like to dive in, the story is really rich.
Yeah, I would love to. I think that, and thank you for saying that also about like just reflecting all of this back to me, that I take that in and I'm really deeply touched. And it's just interesting to hear someone say to me that they, to kind of describe a level of embodiment that they perceive in me, because my whole journey began because I was just so disembodied,
mm-hmm.
and so out of my body for a really long time.
Do you have a sense of what created that? The kind of need to disembody, because it's a protection, of course.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Well, my family structure is quite unorthodox. I have two biological sisters, but when I was quite small, I also, my parents adopted two boys who were Indigenous First Nations boys from the reserve that we lived close to. And it was kind of like right away there was just a chaos in the house, because both brothers were special needs, both were fed to alcohol. Like, so much energy and attention was directed toward them. And also, I think my nervous system, because I loved them so freaking deeply,
mm-hmm.
like right from the beginning, and I think my nervous system went into this state of like, I need to either protect them or I need to be the one who's okay, so uh-huh. that, because I can't be the one who's not okay, because that's their job.
You can't be like the one who needs help or care.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then, I mean, without going into too much detail, it was just a lot of family strife. It was like divorce and my mm. brothers in and out of treatment and in and out of jail, and my parents really not having a lot of resources or know-how. I mean, this was like 20-some years ago, before there was Gabor Mate and before we knew about childhood trauma and before we knew about all this. So it was just a really chaotic beginning. And then to deal with the chaos, I started drinking and doing drugs really young. I was probably 12
wow. when
I started drinking like every weekend. And that lasted for a long time, and got into drugs pretty quickly. And but was always kind of keeping my head above water.
Mm-hmm.
It was like things were always kind of okay because my grades were okay, because that was the non-negotiable in my house. It was like, as long as you do well in school, like, do whatever the fuck else you want, basically.
It's such an odd measure for us culturally of like, you know, and I'm about to be a parent, so I say this with no judgment, but it's just sort of like being on the precipice of this transition from being a kid to becoming a parent. Mm-hmm. It's like, wow, these things that are sort of set as barometers for how your child is doing. And it's like, I had a legit nervous breakdown at age 17. I was starving myself. I was chaos inside, and I was a straight A student, and I had a job, and I had friends, and I never got in a car accident, and like, you know?
Yeah, which is actually really, it's dangerous that we have these superficial standards, because I know that just so many people were looking at me and being like, oh, she's really okay. When I was just so deeply not okay.
Yeah.
And I kind of ran away and went to school far away from where I grew up. And then one of my brothers died.
Mm.
I was 19. And his death was a really strange rupture in my life that I really didn't understand at the time, because it brought up emotions that I just didn't know how to deal with. It brought up a lot of, it wasn't just grief. It brought up a lot of panic. It brought up a lot of anxiety. And so my response at 19 was just to drink more and do more drugs. And then school all of a sudden wasn't okay and lost my scholarship. And it was like a real downward spiral. And what I realized kind of at the bottom of that or somewhere along that spiral was that I had been sexually abused by this brother that had died. And I totally blocked it out. And then around 20, maybe a year after he died, it just started to kind of land in this really strange way of, okay, I don't really recollect. I don't have the memory of, like, this is exactly how and where and da-da-da. But it was, like, flashbacks. And it was this feeling in my body that I just could not deny. And nobody knew what the hell to do with this. Like, I didn't have a big support system, but like my boyfriend at the time was just like totally ill-equipped to deal with it, as was I.
Well, it's such a I'm certain, I don't know statistics on this, but universal occurrence that particularly when it happens in childhood, sexual assault is something that we can block from our prefrontal cortex, and it is a living memory in our body. And to say, you know, this is something that we'll touch on later when we go more in depth about the feminine, it's like, I know this, I can't tell you why, but I know this for certain, really has very little to no credence in our culture.
No, totally.
I've had a very similar experience, and I just want to thank you for sharing this experience. It's really powerful, and I'm certain more universal than unique.
I think you're right in that, sadly. I think a lot of women have, or and men, a lot of people have this fracture when they know something to be true in their body, but it's not acknowledged or reinforced by anything around them. And that literally drove me crazy. Literally drove me into an even deeper spiral, because I was like, am I crazy? Did I make this up? Can I even tell my family about this? And like, when I did tell my family, it was received in the way that I kind of expected. It was like, well, can you like tell us how and give us details? And I was like, I can't. And looking back, it's so obvious to see the debris that was affecting my life. Because I would go through these periods of like using and drinking and being hypersexual, and a lot of things looking back, I was like, yeah, of course that's what I was going through, but there was just no ability to really see that. And thank God for yoga is all I can say.
When did that enter your life?
It came in around 21. And it was really I will always have the deepest respect for that practice. And for as much as we talk about the ills of the 21st century yoga industry, you know, it gave me the first space I had to really connect with my body.
I think that's so true. I think that's so true for people. And it's, you know, I have to call myself out. I spend a lot of breath complaining, and
rightfully so. Like, things are fucked up.
There's a lot that's fucked up. And, you know, I never want to begrudge anyone an environment, a space, a time that got them into healthy contact with their body. You know, such a drastic departure, right? From literally not knowing the difference between your ass and your elbow to suddenly, like, I feel my feet on the ground for the first time in my whole life. I took a deep breath for what was probably the first time in my whole life. Like, Yes, more of those spaces, please.
Like I'm allowed to feel something that for whatever reason I just couldn't feel before because I wasn't relaxed enough or I wasn't safe enough. And it's funny because I really didn't know right side from left side. It was so weird to have cues and be like, do this. And I was like, I don't even know where that is in my body. And I had this really amazing yoga teacher who, like, literally, because I was still drinking and working at a bar, and I would show up. There was one class at 6 a.m. and it was the class I liked to go to because there was no one else there, so all of my anxiety around being with other people couldn't come through there. And I would come in just like stinking of booze and cigarettes, and she just took me in and was so present with me and attentive. And that one relationship really changed a lot.
That's beautiful.
And she, this particular teacher would always talk about India because that was a big part of her journey, and she was an Ashtanga practitioner. And so I just got this idea in my head one day, like, okay, that's the only person I know that I actually want to be like. You know, she was the only role model I really had at that time, like this was, 15, 12 years ago, like pre-Instagram, pre these amazing communities where we can see and be inspired by other people. Like, I had not seen anyone like her, and she had gone on this journey. So I was like, okay, I want to go on a similar journey. And that's what led me to really dive into not just traveling, but seeking out yoga. And then within that, because it was so present for me to deal with what was happening in these memories and with this sexual abuse, and because I just knew that that was going to be part of the journey because it had to be. And it was a big part of the journey.
What were the steps? I mean, how did you get yourself from working in a bar, lots of partying, to overseas? And did you go directly to India and then you made your way to Turkey? And we'll fill in these details for listeners, but that's
Yeah, no, it wasn't direct at all.
okay.
But essentially I was actually about to go to law school because I was like, well, that's what all the other people in my life are doing, and
Yeah, that
that's what
seems
smart
like a
people
pretty good
do,
idea.
right? Like, I'm dying on the inside and I can barely make it through a day, but I should go commit to this big thing. But luckily, I had some money saved up because of that, and I just knew I wasn't gonna make it. I just knew, like, this infrastructure was so fragile within myself that it was gonna break sooner or later. So I thought, okay, I have some money. I'm just gonna buy a one-way ticket. And I flew into India and literally had no plans, which looking back on it was just really irresponsible and dumb. But I had a friend there. I had one friend who was from Canada, and we met, and it turned out that she was pregnant. She found out she was pregnant in India, and we kind of began this journey together. We went to Rishikesh, and the first yoga school teacher class, anything that I went to was a tantric yoga school. And I walked in, and they immediately started talking about sexuality, and I was like, okay, I'm here. I'm doing this. I'm not really sure what this is yet, but I'm doing it.
Was that appeal for you based on what you knew you were healing? Or, and this is just a larger question that I have for you. You know, I remember playing one of those stupid games where it's like, you ask a friend, describe me in 3 words. If I were a fruit, what would I be? Blah, blah, blah. And one of my friends, she was like, you're very sexual. And I was like, what? Like, it totally didn't even occur to me. And now I can look back and be like, oh, this started at like 2 years old.
Yeah.
But I was like playing with myself in the bathtub. But there was no, you know, there's no cultural holding for it. And I was lucky it wasn't shamed in my household, but it was also not necessarily like fostered as a strength, or I don't know. So my question for you is, hearing, going into this class and having sexuality be brought to the forefront as a theme, as a thread for this path, do you have a sense of what part of you that appealed to primarily? And was that kind of an awakening point for you about the role sexuality played in your unique story?
I was really coming to it feeling really broken in this area. Like, how the abuse really played out in my life was not so much in my physical responses. Like, sex was okay. That was never a problem, apart from being hypersexual at certain times.
Yeah.
But it was playing out in relationships really destructively. It was like playing out in cheating patterns, like just power dynamics, abusive relationships, like obsessive thinking. And like, so there was this feeling of, okay, I know something needs to be addressed because I can see that it's rippling out into my life. I had the wherewithal to see that this wasn't isolated, you know, that like what I was remembering was affecting different parts of my life. And I just really wanted to heal. I really wanted to heal. And my idea of what that means is a lot different today than it was back then. But I just wanted to be in a space where I could learn about what was going on with me and why I was having these feelings. And I wanted to be in a space where I could speak freely about it, because I just had never been in a space like that in my life before.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like I didn't know what I was looking for, per se. But then I landed there and I was like, okay, I think this fits the criteria.
One another example of the feminine, knowing without knowing.
Yes.
The visceral response to something that we can't rationalize ourselves away from.
Yeah.
Amazing. How long did you spend in that environment, and what did that lead to?
So that turned into about 5 months in India, working with different teachers with this school. The school's called Agama, and there's actually been a lot of controversy and a lot of shit go on in there. And it definitely, while I was there, I didn't experience anything personally that left me scarred or left me hurt. But looking back on it, I'm like, oh wow, yeah, there were some really messed up ways that things were talked about, or that women were how women were portrayed. It's this really weird situation where like I owe so much to my time at that school, and I owe so much to the teachings, which at the core are really beautiful.
Yeah.
They were beautiful teachings. They were empowering teachings. I learned a lot just by virtue of the caliber and quality of people that were there with me. Like, some of my best friends to this day are from that school. And then also the other side of that is like, Yeah, there were some things that were weird and nobody really talked about. And I'm really glad that they finally came out this year, just about like, yeah, abuses of power and certain ways of framing the feminine. So I'm actually still unraveling this in my own being, but it's like that school represents to me so much of how I did empower my feminine, how I did heal, and also how I'm still learning. Because I'm still coming to grips with certain things or aspects or beliefs that I took on from there that I'm like, is that actually true for me? And I've had, I was just talking about this with a friend actually the other day, is like, it was a real gift for the school to kind of self-destruct in a way, because it made me really question everything that I learned there. So I couldn't take anything at face value any longer. I couldn't assume anything. I had to question everything. Is that really, really true for me? And I really had to start a new phase of thinking for myself and knowing things, not just understanding them, but like really knowing them.
What was your relationship to that, your own sense of boundary or no, or even maybe, but not all of it at the time that you were in that school? Because I feel like that's, where you were coming from. Was there already a kind of questioning of authority, questioning of the straight and narrow, or just taking things at face value and putting yourself in a position to be told what to do? I mean, not going to law school and taking your savings and taking off to India, while there was some part of you that was like, yeah, it may have been a little irresponsible. I do think there's also something in that of like you really claiming, I don't have the internal infrastructure, the energetic bandwidth to put myself through law school, which some people might think is quote unquote safer. There's actually something safer about following my instinct. So I'm just curious about your own intuition about what level of your own discernment was already playing itself out that perhaps is part of what protected you.
Yeah, that's a really good question. It's interesting because on the one hand, I was just so open and just this sponge. I didn't know shit about spirituality or yoga or anything, and it was like this huge wave of information, and I kind of just lapped it up as much as I could. And then on the other hand, I think because of my background, the history of abuse, plus the body awareness that was coming online, I was very, very particular about who I wanted to engage with sexually. I don't think I think I had maybe one or two partners in like the 4 years that I was there, which was unusual because it was a polyamorous community. But I knew right away, kind of in the same way that I knew I was going to probably crack if I went to law school, I knew I was probably going to crack if I opened myself up too much. So I was pretty boundaried in some ways, especially when it came to like partners and sexual experiences. I definitely wasn't like, bring it on. I was more like, bring on the information, bring on the meditation, bring on the yoga. And then all of this sexual stuff, I just knew I was so fragile already. I was like, I'm gonna take that in a really slow-paced kind of way. And in the end, I think that's what was, yeah, helped me to get out of there without being rather unscathed.
Well, and it's an interesting point in the conversation because my understanding of Tantra, my experience with it, which is more closely related, you know, I've studied Tantra through the Himalayan Institute and not explicitly through sexuality, although it's sort of like, you know, the fundamental nature of things is sexual. If we're talking about it on a more esoteric level, and through Ayurveda, how to relate to nature, which includes our bodies and our desires and our impulses. And my most treasured learning, and I've said it in every single interview so far, I say it all the time, anything can be medicinal or toxic. And it comes down to where you are on your journey and what the circumstances are and what your perception of it is. And so there's something about this, you know, you and I have talked about kind of the, I don't know, attitude about you choosing not to engage with so many partners or be polyamorous, and that being held up as kind of like the pinnacle of liberation and real freedom, rather than trusting your instinct of, if I'm going to heal, actually I need more boundaries, I need more one-on-one, and I'd love to hear more from you on that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because as sex educators, I think there's a lot of assumption about, like,
oh yeah, that we're just totally open and like, woo, bring it on.
It's a free for all the time.
Yeah, it's funny to deal with that projection, actually, because that has really not been my journey at all. It's been, I'd say I was more hypersexual when I was younger, when I was drinking, when I was less in my body, I was less inhibited. And then the more that I got into my body and really started to feel triggers and emotions,
your nervous system.
Exactly. Then it was almost it almost pendulated to the opposite side, where it was like hypo-boundary, like didn't want to engage with people sexually, was like very particular about my partners. And yeah, I think what I feel about that is that both of those experiences really served me at the time, mm-hmm. actually. Like you're talking about, like, you know, even our mistakes can be medicine, mm-hmm. and even, you know, maybe I could have been more open within a neo-tantra community. Like there was a lot of opportunity to learn things that probably won't arise again. But at the same time, I'm just so trusting of my path, and that was just what was meant to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I did get a little bit of pushback while in the neo-tantra community of like people wanting to kind of bring me into a more open place, but for the most part people were pretty respectful.
That's
I have
great.
To say, I mean, the point where I felt a little bit judged, actually, like there was kind of this idea of like, oh, well, the more spiritual, and I'm using air quotes right now, like the more spiritual you are, the more open you'll be and the more lovers that you'll have. And I was just like, well, then I must not be the most spiritual person at the party, and that's okay with me. Like, that's really okay, because it was just this knowing of, like, that's a fragile spot. You need more safety.
I'm curious about your thoughts on something. What's occurring to me is, you know, while Tantra is, compared to other philosophies, a more feminine-centric philosophy, that notion of, like, the more spiritual you are, the more open you are, the more lovers, the more you can engage with just everybody, because we're all one spirit. It's like actually a very masculine ideal of transcendence, where the body isn't a thing. And the body is giving us cues and signals all the time about what no is, like, not that. There's a little more discernment, I think, actually, with the feminine, because there is this earthen, body-bound experience, and the body can't handle everything. Yeah. Your soul is not meant to taste everything in this incarnation. Yeah. And so, wow, like, what an amazing place for you to become the feminine educator and leader. I consider you a thought leader. I really think you have a lot to offer in this conversation, but take it away. Take the mic, Blair.
I love what you said also, just that whole bit about like a masculine approach to masculine versus feminine approach to spirituality, even within the broad umbrella of Tantra. Mm-hmm. Because we can look at it as like the distorted masculine being like, well, I need to get somewhere. We need to get somewhere. Even if it's like enlightenment.
Or transcendence.
Exactly. It's like, well, we need to have sex for 8 hours so that we can get somewhere and we can like be, have this achievement or whatever, right? And that's very different than the feminine approach of like just enjoying and reveling and being just for the sake of being.
Mm.
And in that community in particular, you could really see that there was this drive for people to like get somewhere and achieve something, which on the one hand was kind of beautiful, honestly, because people were, I don't think I'll ever be in a community again where people literally will hole up and like practice yoga and meditate for 8 hours a day, like it's their job. And that's what people were doing because they were just so fired up. But then on the other hand, like the feminine approach of just honoring exactly what is there, like honoring the pleasure if it's there, honoring the no if it's there, not pushing past, not pushing through.
And being able to stay present, in what you're saying, I hear almost explicitly being able to stay present regardless of the external or internal circumstance, to stay connected to yourself, to stay in your body, whether you like what you're feeling or not. And not, of course, like withstanding pain or abuse. That's not what I'm saying at all. But just that, like, you know, I mean, what you're describing is a foundation for being able to be with the reality of your life and not have to drink or do drugs to deal with it. Mm-hmm. Not having to kind of frantically search for a way out, but to be in the moment and allow for the solution to reveal itself.
And this, like, this kind of spirituality, which is all about up and out, like going somewhere, getting somewhere, leaving your body, having a peak experience, that just doesn't interest me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it only interested me for a very short period of time. And now with greater attention to the feminine, it's just, I'm so interested in what is here and what is alive right now in this moment and how to go deeper into that. Because maybe you can relate. I just spent so many years running.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was almost like my spirituality just became another way of running away and trying to feel something different.
Yes. Yes.
And like get out of the discomfort of just being a human.
Well, my teacher reflected back to me at one point, like, it was real easy for me to go from the people pleasing good little Catholic girl to the best yogi on the block, which nearly killed me. You know, like, look at how good I am at doing asana and eating my Ayurvedic whatever every day. And then, of course, that, like, led me to my darkest places and my most dysfunctional relating to my body and food and alcohol and sex. And it was when I was, like, most active in yoga, because there was still this ideal held up as, like, you know, a 15-minute home practice that's mostly moving and breathing how you want doesn't really count.
And yeah, that's not real.
It's not real. It's not, it's not good enough. Like, yeah. I mean, we could spend, we could spend weeks talking about that, but I'm so glad that you pointed out kind of that hunt, the pursuit for the peak experience, and back to an earlier point of, you know, seeing the value in some of these more masculine pursuits. There is something to having a goal and being disciplined and having consistency, but like anything, or not like anything, but that is an incomplete experience of oneself.
Exactly.
That's, and that most, in and of itself is not sustainable or healing or revealing ultimately.
And I think most of us, because of the culture we live in and because of what our culture idealizes and values, we're more prone to that doing, achieving type of mentality.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you see it a lot in the yoga world. You see it a lot. It was really, it was almost painful. So to like jump ahead just a little bit.
Yeah, please.
So after being in Thailand and India for about 4 years, I moved to Istanbul and started teaching in a really masculine way. Like, I was, like, if you've ever been to Istanbul, it's incredibly chaotic. I would almost say that the city itself is just so freaking feminine in some ways. Like, you have to break that down to really get the point, but like, people are living with a lot of chaos, and so there's so much tension and control and like holding on to the things that just keep people above water.
Yeah.
And something that was really painful, and it also came up for me, it was like a lot of, in the yoga community, body image issues. And I'd never had body image issues before in my life, and then all of a sudden I was in this yoga community where it was like, well, look at her body. Mm. Oh my God. Wow, she is like this. I'm not like that. And there were so many beautiful things about my time there, but it also revealed to me like the work that was still left to be done in terms of like honoring the feminine aspects of me, honoring my body, not pushing through, not restricting or punishing.
And in a very basic, oversimplified way, in the way that you and I are discussing the masculine and the feminine, just for context, for people listening, can think of the masculine as more like A to B, linear, black and white, and the feminine as a prism.
It's a great definition.
This shift of perspective, if you just like lean a little to the left, oh, actually, that's quite different. That's more feminine approach. It's not as straightforward. It's often described as a spiral, or at least circular.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's safe to say that universally it's a predominantly masculine culture, and I mean, even that word, dominance, a book that I have gleaned a lot from as a teacher is called Sacred Pleasure by Rhianne Eisler, and it's this anthropological study of culture and how we went from goddess worshiping, feminine centric view of life to a more masculine approach. And it's like, as really kind of like this first massive shift in climate for the planet, and human beings realizing how chaotic nature is, sort of spurned this increase and proliferation of dominance culture. Just what you're describing, what I heard you describing about Istanbul, like the nature of things is so chaotic, I need to overexert control. And the body is feminine. It is in constant flux and adaptation. And to the mind, that's a little bit too much.
Yeah, it's scary.
And I'm curious, I'm making a bit of a leap here because I want to respect your time. I'm curious how this, if there's a specific thread, or maybe we just like jump to it, has informed your approach to relationship, to supporting people and how they relate to their own bodies and relating to the masculine, to a partner, to the chaos of intimate relationship. I hope that's not too far of a leap. To me, it seems like, well, this is clearly how you developed your
We can
skill set as a
go there.
coach.
Well, that's a meaty question. It's a big one. It's like, can you say it again? How do I approach or guide people in relationships?
Yeah, I mean, this experience that you've had of being sort of guided in understanding through your own felt experience is what I hear you saying, an understanding of the feminine and having a deep reverence for that, cultivating within yourself a capacity to be with her, that which is always changing and fluctuating. How this informs you supporting women in their relationship to their own feminine, their own body, and even relationship, because again, I just feel like culturally the norm is it's supposed to be XYZ, and when it inevitably is not, we freak out. And it really is like, let's get to know the feminine better and work with her and what that actually means rather than just like going off into the woods with your, I don't know, flower crown and a bunch of women and calling yourselves goddesses for 3 days and like thinking that's being with the feminine.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's interesting because when I get feedback from the women that I work with, and it's funny that they use the same words without talking to each other, they usually say something about being presented with a new dimension of reality, or like a whole new reality, which is really what the feminine is, which is kind of why it's so fucking hard to talk about to people at times, because it's like really having to take yourself out of what you know, which is mind-based, like mind-based, thought-based, and allowing the body to speak, and just allowing the body to have space and to be acknowledged. And for a lot of people, that their nervous system actually isn't operating at a level where they can listen.
Right, where that would even be safe to go in that deep.
It's like, if you've had trauma, if you're living in a super stressful environment, if you work 10 hours a day, like you really, it takes a lot of work to get your system into a place where you can actually listen. And I remember, like, in my own life, a time where I didn't even know the difference between a thought, an emotion, and a sensation.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't tell the difference. I was like, well, but I just want to think this thing. I want to feel this thing. So I'm like, you know, not really speaking to how I'm actually feeling in the moment. I'm like projecting into the future, and like my therapist can't get me into my body. And I think a lot of people live in that space. So the work I'm doing with women is practices that allow the nervous system to be in a receptive, open state. So allowing stress, like dealing with stress, dealing with freeze in the body. A big part of that for women is actually movement.
Yeah. Makes a lot of sense. A big part of that
is movement, because you can't talk your way into an experience of the feminine. Like, the feminine is feeling. So when someone is stuck, when they're feeling something that's overwhelming, when they can't feel at all, when they're numb, I find especially for women that the process of movement is the feminine and the physiology that allows and supports feeling and supports the feminine to come online.
Yeah, one of my favorite teachers is Sally Kempton, and in one of her meditations, understanding the breath is the feminine and your awareness of the breath is the masculine. So just bearing witness to my impulse to move my arm and then allowing myself to move my arm. This, I mean, it sounds so simple. And that is the power of the work that you and I have both experienced as practitioners and offer as teachers. Like, there's so much richness, and you could spend an hour with a person just holding space for the freeze response that comes in when you top down micromanage your body's impulse to do something that is relatively benign but feels like it could just blast you open. As you're talking, you know, before we started the interview, we were talking a little bit about, I don't know about you, I've never been satisfied with a bio that I've written or like a description of the work that I offer. And I always just ask people to give testimonials, because it's like, what am I going to say? Like, I'm about to blast your worldview wide open. Like,
it's going to be a paradigm shift. Like, people are like, what the hell does that even mean? And I don't even blame them for
right,
that.
It's like, right.
What? But I think also, like, the beautiful thing that we get to do as teachers is just model. Right? Because, like, I spend time with you, Stacey, and I'm like, fuck, she is on a different plane. Like, I love, like, basking in your energy. And there are certain people who you just feel that, right?
Mm.
And that's, yeah, what we get to do as teachers is we just get to model what it is, because that's also the feminine, isn't it? It's like, we can talk about it, we can conceptualize, we can break it down, but it's felt. And you feel it through connection or through not just what someone is saying, but how they say it. And how it makes you feel when they say it. And I know that these teachers, like, understanding that, like teachers like Kimberly and other really feminine teachers, it's like understanding that on a certain level, the transmission that happens is also part of this weird and wonderful paradigm shift.
Absolutely. So grateful for our continued friendship, partnership, camaraderie. And I would love to have you on again because it will take another hour, but to talk about marriage and partnership a little more specifically.
I love that.
Let's do that. Let's plan for that. And for those of you who want to know more about Blair, all of the information is on my website, her name, links to her offerings. She's studying somatic experiencing. She's just a deepening well of information and skills, and someone that I adore. If you want to say anything else specific, Blair, that you are offering, courses that are starting, anything at all.
I have a free course called The Pleasure Path, which is a great introduction to really simple techniques that attune a woman's body and her nervous system to pleasure. So that is available on a link through social media. I think it's on my Instagram and like the bio. And I'm starting a course in August called The Fierce Feminine.
Yes.
Yes, which is about embodying power as a feminine being and practices to support that.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Thank you for your wisdom. Thank you for your friendship. Thank you for your work.
It's been such a fun afternoon, Stacey. Thank you also. This was a great conversation.
My pleasure. Take care of yourself, and I can't wait to have you on again.
Me too.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for joining us on today's episode of the Sacred Body Podcast. I look forward to joining you again. And if you want to learn more about today's episode, please visit stacyramsauer.com. You can leave your comments, share far and wide, and we'll see you next time.